Well, I gotta say, if you guys enjoyed the 1980s, you guys definitely got to relive those days all over again. From the setup, to the graphics, to the constant pushes you just felt like you needed to see Belinda Carlisle while you were at it, to even the ending play music of Dawkins' Into the Fire 1984 song. Welcome, everybody. This is, I guess, the WNC's Power Review. Title pending. I'm Johnny Florida, and join along with me is, well, since of how what he lived through, since he lived through all this kind of stuff, I guess we can call him WNC's studio master, Papa Dave.
Hello.
Really? You didn't like that intro?
I thought it was great. I was concentrating on unmuting myself. So I had other things going on. It's not all about you, John.
Well, I'm not trying to make it was all about. I was trying to make sure if I did you justice. I'm trying to do my intros for you. I'm trying to do more justice for you than Batman does for Gotham.
You, sir, do me plenty of justice. Thank you very much.
Nice. So, I'm going to keep the music playing in the background for a little bit, guys. It's the first episode, and play the music like that. But, Dave, I want to ask you, because I took a lot of good notes from tonight's show. Unlike what I usually do, everybody, I talked to Dave about this. I'm wanting to possibly do an NWA weekly recap. The only problem is every other week I work on a Tuesday, and I work nights. So this week I'm off. Next week I'm working. And so I won't be able to do it live every week. It probably end up being a recording in those cases. So we're going to see how that goes. But I took a lot of notes about this, and it's going to be basically a recap of all the matches and the spots. Something I'm usually not doing is to give an idea for everybody what it's going to be. But I got to ask you, Dave, you know, the whole place had a classic look to it. The flags, the announcers table, the separate interview table, simple entrance. I mean, it's just literally, it's just a sheet section. You know, you're coming through. There's no Titantron. There's nothing like that. Not even music. Except the only music you really heard was the was that little bit of classic music kind of thing for a couple seconds when they'd pull up the graphics to show who was the competitors in the match.
Yeah.
This screamed like 1983. This screamed everything before, like the Black Thursday incident, or even later on when it was Mid-Atlantic to WCW. This screamed the 1980s. If you want, before we do any kind of recap, any stuff of the show, a review of the overall atmosphere. Did it take you back to the 1980s? How did it feel for you? What was good? What was bad?
It was eerily 1980s. It was, dude, if that show were pure nostalgia, I would be able to, I would truly be able to OD on that show for years to come. That was as much a nostalgia trip as it was a wrestling show. I mean, I even noticed the angles they shot across the ring were 1980s corner to corner angles where they're catching not particularly the action, but they're catching whatever's going on, and then they're looking at the crowd. And, man, it brought me back. No shit. It truly did. I mean, it was, and what was it? Somebody in our chat room, in our Facebook chat, Mucho, said watching this, he felt like he needed a line of Coke, a highball, and a Cohiba.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that y'all think so little of us. That's all the fuck you think we were doing is snorting Coke, drinking whiskey, and smoking cigars on a Saturday afternoon while watching TBS wrestling.
Well, I mean, if you think about shows like wrestling. Miami Vice and Magnum PI, I mean, that's all people are going to think about.
Well, you know. Maybe we were drinking a little bit. Some of us were doing other things. Some of us weren't. But dude, it was just this. Oh man, this is fucking weird. There was just this weird feeling that I've been there before. The only difference is I can tell that it's shot, of course, in high definition.
Right.
You know, because I'm watching it on a high def TV, so there's an appearance that's a little bit different. Other than that, you know, even down to the skirt around the ring,
yeah,
the blue skirt with the yellow letters NWA, the way the crowd was, where the flags were. Now that one setup where the guys came over to do interviews, that was a little different. That looked a little more sterile than the old set. The old set was kind of a pale blue, and that one was sort of a very clean white.
Oh yeah. Now, I remember seeing like a Dusty and Ric Flair promos that it was, like you said, blue. And I remember even back during the Georgia days, you see they had the World Championship Wrestling logo and everything on it, whether we're talking about like the Vince McMahon Black Thursday incident or whatever. But yeah, I remember that background.
And it just, even with that minor adjustment, everything about it was, you've seen this before. You know, you don't have to worry. Although it's new, it's old. Although, you know, you haven't seen this in a long, long, long time, just take a look at it. You've seen it before. And immediately I got comfortable with it right away.
Yeah.
You know, it's very unusual to see modern day stars in a studio wrestling setting, and it was a very interesting experience.
What would you say would be the as far as authenticity? Like that, you know, if you guys didn't watch the show, at the very end of the night, and we'll get to it. Nick Aldis had said NWA stands for National Wrestling Alliance. But he also said that it stood for, I got it written down, he said, never without authenticity. Now, that's talking about Tim Storm, I'll admit, but how do you feel? Did you, if they were, like you, everything you said, did it meet the authenticity of classic 1980s? Did it meet the authenticity and standards of the NWA? Do you feel it's done enough justice, what their plans are as far as the visual and the design?
The visual itself of the set, the way they set everything up, the ring, the way the cameras were set up, the shots, I get they're going for a very simple studio wrestling feel, just like, you know, sort of an 80s and sometimes in some cases early 90s studio wrestling program. I liked it. You know, all I can tell you is because it is so very familiar, I liked it a lot. I didn't have to, you know, and I was sitting there for a while going, wow, holy shit. You know, the first time they did that corner to corner shot where they just sort of go across the ring and not particularly focusing on the wrestling itself, just on what's happening in the ring. I remember seeing that shot 100 times on Saturday afternoon. At corner to corner, then you see the crowd, and then they switch the camera, and they're back to the action shot, and I'm going, whoa. I mean, you know, obviously these guys have done their homework, they've studied their lessons, and they're truly interested in presenting modern professional wrestling in a way that a broader audience is going to understand and get. You know, I'm not saying it's all for us old folks and it's all for nostalgia, because that cheapens it. Because just to say it's nostalgia means that it's an act. It's not pro wrestling. It's a product being presented. If they're doing real pro wrestling, which I think they are, and they're taking it more seriously. And that's one thing I did notice. They seem to take it very seriously.
Right.
I mean, of course there was, I mean, it's pro wrestling, so people are going to goof around and yell at each other and do all kinds of strange things, but, the world title match was presented properly. That schmoz between, Bocephus and James Storm was done right. The tag teams, everything looked the way it's supposed to look. And because it is studio wrestling, the feel is very intimate. You're right there on top of everything. You know, as opposed to the long hard camera shot in the big 10,000 seat arenas.
Right.
Where they're just continually going around and around and around. This was a lot, this was easier to follow, and really nicely done. Very nicely lit. The presentation was very good. I appreciated it.
Oh, I'm definitely glad to hear that. And especially because of the fact, like I said, you know, I pointed out, I really wanted your opinion on it because you grew up with it. You lived through it. I mean, the only studio wrestling that I've had was, I watched some championship wrestling from Hollywood on Fight TV. And I don't know if you want to, you know, I'd have to ask you this question. Would you consider Impact to be, for its longest time, would you consider Impact to have been a studio show because it was done in a soundstage? Or would you say no to that? Because people don't know, by the way, Impact, when it was TNA Impact, Into Impact, when they went to Orlando, it was at Soundstage 20 and 21. So I don't know if that counts as studio wrestling or not.
Well, yeah, it kind of has to, but that had a whole different feel.
Right, exactly.
So that's that had more of a small arena feel to it, because there were actually sides there.
Yeah,
the crowd wasn't just in one place. You also knew that there was crowd on the left and maybe some crowd behind or you know, somewhere else. Now in this show, there was one spot.
Right.
All of the crowd was across from the hard camera. There's nobody on either side. That one bank of seats going up of bleachers, you know, that's their seating.
Yeah. I actually, quick thing, everybody. I don't know if you saw. Take a look on the NWA's YouTube channel. They aired in the last day or two a sneak peek video of a couple of things here or there. To help promote it, and they showed Jim Cornette when he first got into the GPB to check it out, and he was blown away at how authentic it was, like you said. But the one thing that he noticed that was different was the seats were in a built-in bleacher system going up at a diagonal vertical basis. So he pointed out that was the only thing different, because the old days all the seats were on the floor, so you didn't see the seats all the time. I mean, you didn't see all the seats coming up like that. They were just all on the ground. So that's the only thing that threw him off, but not in a bad way. It was just changed. So he's like, it's going to look even bigger now because you could see every individual fan, which, side note, I don't know if anybody saw from the promos, but do you remember the It's Still Real to Me, Damn It guy? Yeah. He was in the, at the show as well. So, I thought that was pretty cool. And, as we get into it, everybody, the recap, one quick thing is that they did announce that they're going to be returning to Atlanta. Most likely, I didn't see exactly the same for the GPB, but they'll be returning to Atlanta December 14th to December 16th, and tickets will be on sale October 18th. I could tell you there was 154 people in the studio, and if anybody's thinking, oh, you counted them all out, I didn't. I am actually signed up. If you guys check it out yourself, you can sign up for the NWA's email alert system, which I did, and they give you all the updates. So I was trying to find out for the shows, tickets, every alert you get, and one of the emails pointed out that the shows were limited to exactly 154 people. So that's what the attendance was for the show.
Really? Only 154?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I mean, you could tell there weren't that many. And here's another interesting little fact. I immediately saw about a half a dozen kids and a couple of old people. Still didn't see too many girls, but I actually saw some older gray-haired folks and some kids.
Gage, you're not going to see women at wrestling shows anymore, man. That's
well, I disagree. If you put on the right kind of wrestling show, you can get some women to go. I have no doubt about that.
What's the right kind of wrestling show?
I don't know. We are, you know, this is the great experimentation phase right now. There's like 172 hours a week of televised, well-produced professional wrestling coming our way. So within this great, mishmash of all of this stuff, I think we're going to find out, what the ladies love.
Cool jeans.
Well, I was thinking more ladies love Cool Dave, but Cool James is fine too. I mean,
LL Cool D. I don't know if that has the same ring as LL Cool J, but, you know, we'll try it out for a little bit. See if that works, see if it gets over.
I like Range Balls in, the Discord chat. He's got a Burt Reynolds, Smoking the Bandit gift going. He's like, I felt like Burt was going to drive up any second now. It was cool. So he like, I guess that's going talking about the show's classic look as well. I'll tell you the one negative.
It did look really cool. Go ahead.
Go on, Mike. Go on.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I'm interrupting anyways, but. I wanted to say that I did feel like I was kind of transported back to the 80s for a second. Just, you know, old school set, studio wrestling. Had a modern twist on it, but it still had that classic old school feel.
Oh, yeah. Shout out to Range Balls again. He just commented. He said, my wife was watching the NWA show, and she said that this promotion has the hotter guys, so females will show up. If they can get enough pictures and videos and social media out there, there's that.
And Eddie Kingston's going to draw all the babes in.
He could bring in the Latinas, you know, and maybe even when they start showing Melina on there, that'll help out as well.
I'll be watching for that one, that's for sure.
The one thing I got to say that was for me, and now this is only me on a personal preference. This is not me saying that they did bad on this. This is a personal preference thing. The one thing that I'm not a fan of when it comes to studio wrestling is the idea that there's just the one side of fans. I remember I've seen a couple of times, and I recommend anybody go check it out, because if you want a real nostalgia hit, The Rock just made his triumphant return to SmackDown after, what, like 7 years or some shit, they said? Well, I watched on YouTube Jerry the King Lawler versus Flex Cavana in 1996. For the USWA Unified World Heavyweight Championship in Memphis, I believe. And it was their studio show. And Flex Cavana, it was supposed to be a championship versus career match. Flex lost the match, so he was gone from the USWA. And he reappeared a couple of months later as Rocky Maivia in WWF. And I thought they were, when I watched the studio on that and seeing that match, I thought it was maybe a failing company. Because I didn't understand that concept of the studio-style wrestling. And at the time, you know, I heard about it a little bit, but I never actually watched it to see to get the idea. But, you know, I thought it was like, oh, my God, there's like 40 fans there. They're doing that bad, really? I didn't understand that studio wrestling was different from arena wrestling. And I would have thought that for the TV, they would have done bigger. My personal thing is I would rather see fans on all four sides, or at least three sides of the place, and go from there, kind of like how Impact does it. Just because I feel like it does make it look bigger without having to be so much bigger. I mean, 154 people, so what I'm saying is basically, if you can get about 500 fans in there, then you would have been good. That's a personal preference. That's not me saying that that's bad on their part or they were stupid. I mean, they're honoring the history by doing it how they did it. And Dave Marquez, who was the one doing all the interviewing everybody, he's the president of the United Wrestling Network and the owner of Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. They do studio wrestling the exact same way. The only difference is two of the sides has a single row of seats around as well. So it's the exact same thing. So I'm not even saying it as like a knock. That's a personal preference. But overall, I think they really honored the history. They really did a good job. I can't knock it in those avenues. So, but are you guys ready to want to get into the recap itself of the show?
I'm ready.
Miguel?
Sure, why not?
Okay. I love that awesomeness. The very first thing, by the way, the very first thing was started off was the promo by Nick Aldis with Camille and shouting out. I missed the very first minute. There was, I don't know what was going on, but the separate computer that I use that I hook up to the television to play the pay-per-views, YouTube crashed on me. So I pulled up on my phone and I watched the entire show the rest of the way through my phone, trying to reboot this YouTube on that shit. I don't know what the fuck happened. But I missed the first 2 minutes. But from the promo I saw, it was pretty good. How did you feel like, Dave, when you first saw it? It started like this. I mean, you're not talking about any crazy intro or anything, pyro, nothing like that, of course, we talked about. But just going right on into it, and the very first segment is the world's champion.
Well, and I'm like you. I missed the first 5 minutes of it.
Ooh. Mike?
I had to be reminded by Mucha Macho that it was on. And then I looked and said, oh, shit, it is on, so.
All right. Mike, did you see the first 5 minutes?
Yes, I saw the entire show.
Okay, how did you feel with the starting of the promo with Nick Aldis, how it was and everything? How did you feel overall with just the start off?
Frying was good. Did what it needed to do, I thought. Set everything up pretty well.
Yeah, and they did that periodically throughout, guys. I mean, you had I think there was like two or three separate promos throughout the night, video packages with Nick Aldis and with Tim Storm building up to that championship match. So they made that the centerpiece, which we'll get into when the time comes for that match. The first match of the night was Zane and Dave Dawson beating Sal Winaro and Billy Buck in the very first match. Dave, I want to give that to you if you want to take the lead, because this is the very first match in the return of NWA television. And, Mike, I don't know what the hell that sound is. Sounds like you're fucking a jar of mayonnaise. But whatever that is, Dave, what did you think about I talked about the whole appearance, the graphics, if that did justice for you. The fact this was the very first match for the NWA on television since the 1990s. And I'm not talking NWA ECW. I'm not talking NWA TNA. I'm talking NWA since the 1990s when Ric Flair left and WCW split off. How was this for you as the very first match?
That's kind of what really drove this home for me as far as how much attention to detail the production is paying attention to everything. Look how close up everything is shot. There's one hard camera. There's two cameras on each, the right and left side, and they're not hard cameras per se, but they're the bigger ones on rollers. And then they got one or two guys just walking around. So it's new, but I mean I recognized it immediately. I recognized what they were doing, how it was shot, and it was a good TV match. Very good little TV match.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I would say, and this would probably be a nitpick thing, I personally think they should play entrance music just because I think it helps set the energy and the tone, especially when you got some of these guys like, you know, you got James Storm's music. I think that really helps build build an energy buzz going on. Now, I'm not saying they need to play, like, when James Storm came out later in the night, we'll talk about, it wasn't even part of it directly for a match. He was just coming up to be as a call out. So he didn't, I'm okay with the whole, you know, you don't have to play the music for those kind of things. But for the entrance to the matches, I personally think that they should have an entrance with the music and stuff like that. No pyro, you don't need to do all that.
I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
I understand. Oh, what
I mean,
doing.
It's a classic way. So, I mean, I'm not knocking it like that, you know.
If here it is, you're on TV, go get yourself over. I'm not going to play your music. I'm not going to give you a spotlight. There it is. The lights are on. The microphone's hot. Go out there and get yourself over.
Yeah. I was watching.
It's a formula. It's a very old formula, but I mean, look at the guy and look at the enthusiasm that everybody, cut their promos with. And everybody everybody was passionate and you know, when you strip away all the bullshit and you leave you find out, how many real professional wrestlers there are left in the world. A guy who can walk out there without a fucking note of music and right. get himself or herself over just with the words that they say.
Yeah. No, that's actually something part of the sneak peek as well. I was talking about with the NWA on YouTube is, there's a cut where Billy Corgan's talking with, Dave Lagana and, what's his name? Billy Trask. And he talked about how just like if he was a musician, you know, which is ironic because they use music, but what he said, like, he wants the wrestlers to come out the same way when he does. And what he said was, is when you come out initially, there's like that first 8 seconds roughly of awkwardness. You go out there, you see the audience, and there's nothing but yourself. Like you said, there's no pyro, there's no music, there's nothing like that. You come out there, that now, as a musician, he's going to play music later on, but like him and the band, as soon as they came out, that first 8 seconds, they're literally setting the tone of the place with their appearance, literally just their body. And then they start saying some words and getting into music. Like you're saying, the wrestlers, them coming out like that, he wants them to have like that 8 seconds of awkwardness where it's like, it's hitting them really. They're feeling it. They're not having the music to drown out anything. They just, what they hear is what they hear, and they got to work with that tone. And it does do a lot of psychology, not just psychology of the wrestler to the fans, but in this case, psychology of the atmosphere to the wrestler. And so there was definitely that. But great powerhouse match. You know, the Dawsons won. They came out afterwards and cut a big promo that, you know, that they're running the place for tag team wrestling, that they're wanting to take over. And I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know all the matches that happened during the tapings. I don't know if they already had a shot for the tag team titles. But these guys are going to be in there in the future, no doubt. I wouldn't even be surprised. At their size, they're going to be a powerhouse heel team, and they're probably going to end up being tag team champions within the next year. That's my bet. But they beat Billy Buck and Sal Winoro. Mike, I follow a lot of the indie wrestling down here in Florida, and I, you know, used to try to keep up with the news across, but I don't know, I didn't know of any of these guys. I think I've heard of the Dawsons a little bit, but I've never heard of Billy Buck or Sal Winoro. Are these guys, any, you guys, you ever follow these guys in Chicago or
never
the Midwest?
Never heard of them, although Sal Winoro sounds familiar, but I've never seen them before.
Okay. If anybody in the chat, both Discord and Mixlr, if you guys are able to comment, if you know, let us know about that, because we want to get as much info as we can. Because this right here, you know, one of the good things I'd say, at least with technology compared to what they had in the 80s, we can help be a bit of an outlet when it helps to getting people to know some of these names if you've never heard them before. Now, back in the day, we're talking The Observer, PW Insider, Bill Apter. This was how people would learn this stuff. If we can help contribute with that, that'll be very helpful. You know, we want to be able to let everybody know who Billy Buck is, who Sal Winoro is, every little thing about the Dawsons, because this is going to be the avenue of how it can be. You know, the NWA is going to be doing it themselves, but if we can contribute, you know, after that, about side note, Sir Dirk-a-Lot, he's seen Sal Winoro before as well. So after that, Dave, as you guys are going to notice, I'm going to be leaning on Dave a lot for this just because I really want to hit that nostalgia trip. And I got to ask for this real nostalgia trip. What did you think, Dave, of the very first commercial, none other than Austin Idol's Universal Wrestling College?
Okay. I get that they're having some fun in the commercial spots. It was okay. I'm, you know, if you're looking for me to put it over big time, nah. I thought it was okay.
See?
It reminded me of all those commercials, again, in the 80s, you know, that you saw that guys were selling cars and this and that and the other. And
Ziggity Who for the vitamins for the kids.
I'm telling you, and okay, well, there's Austin Idol and he's being Austin Idol. Well, good for him. And I thought, okay, well, you know, this is interesting. I mean, and if there's one thing I can say here again, let me say this. It was different. At least they're shooting for different.
Right.
Which is always good.
I mean, it screamed 1980s to me, like you're saying. The way I mean, I'll tell you what, I don't know where that arena was or that place that he set up for the wrestling. If he has a legitimate wrestling school, it did look pretty professional. I'll say that. So if that's his place, hey, that's awesome. Austin Idol, you've always heard, is a good name. So if you, I mean, if you can learn from him, definitely go for it. But I will say as well, the only thing that was not 1980s, which of course, is the fact that they had a website. You could check out, what is it, UniversalWrestlingCollege.com. But it screamed, like you said, the car dealerships and stuff like that. But it's little things I noticed, Dave. Like one thing, did you notice that it was like the idea that the camera was to be cut off or it was zoomed in too much? Because you couldn't see the top of Austin's head. So I, even that, I thought, like, man, there's no way that's a mistake. They purposely did it to be like the idea, okay, it's not the proper zoom or he's too close or whatever it is. It was just offset. It was not centered exactly. I thought that was awesome how they did it because it was definitely going back to the fact that people wouldn't be focusing on these little things. Ah, cut off part of the top of Austin's head. That's okay. They could see his full face. They could see part of his forehead, his body and his hands, the wrestling ring. That's okay. And it just, like, that's 1980s. Like, this just screamed that to me, and I thought that was really cool. Just those little things. Like, it shows that they're even focusing on the little things that count.
Well, and the thing of it is, they have the space to focus on the little things. Their actual shooting area. They panned the camera a half a dozen times and looked around. The place isn't that big. You can go from the ring. They turn the camera. There's Coronet and the other guy doing commentary. They turn it back a little bit this way. There's the set and the desk for interviews. You see, everything is right there.
Yep.
You know, nothing is the only thing left to the imagination is the wrestling. Here again, not the entrance, not the music. It's the wrestler and the wrestling. That's what's left to the imagination. And I'm going to make a prediction. This is going to be a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. I make that prediction right now. It'll be looked on with cute nostalgia. Oh, look what they're doing. And a lot of folks won't take this seriously because it's such a drastically different presentation.
Right.
And the thing is, the whole presentation itself is actually made to be taken seriously because it has to focus everything on the wrestler, right, on what the wrestler's saying and what the wrestler's doing in the ring, on what they're doing outside the ring. Everything has to be focused on that.
Right.
And I imagine that at some point down the road, they're going to start doing a lot more music. I mean, this is Billy Pumpkin's company. So
Billy Pumpkin. I like that. I mean, yeah. And think about it. When they did the Crockett Cup and when they did the 70th anniversary show, both of them had, entrance music. So, It's going to be coming at some point. Sure. A quick thing for everybody. I'll be trying to do these updates for you guys through the show. I just took a look. The Dawsons, they are originally from Oxnard, California, and they were mainstay tag team on the North Carolina indie scene. Two-time AML tag team champions and one-time CWF Mid-Atlantic tag team champions. If you remember when the Broken Hearties were doing their what was it called, Mike, when they were doing their tag team Conquest for Gold, however they called it?
The Expedition for Gold.
Yeah. One of the belts was the idea was going after the Mid-Atlantic tag team titles. That was CWF Mid-Atlantic. So there's that. Both AML and CWF Mid-Atlantic, great feds in the North Carolina scene. In fact, CWF Mid-Atlantic was like the NWA Mid-Atlantic before Billy Corgan took over. So great feds nonetheless. I'm going to try to update you guys on Billy Buck and Sal Renoa when I get that info. But well, moving on, though.
No one cares about the jobbers, Johnny.
I'm just filling this info, period, okay? Anyway, after that, we have Eli Drake comes out. You know, he cuts his promo. You know, he goes this whole thing. He names off the champions. He's talking about that he's going to be coming for the gold. When the time comes and he's ready, he'll be coming for it. And then cuts into a match with him and Caleb Konley. Now, if people watched Impact, you've seen Caleb Konley. He's pretty good with what he's doing for for wrestling. He's got some time. I mean, he's got some time before he becomes anything big. I don't think he'll ever be a world heavyweight champion. I'm hoping the NWA brings back the junior heavyweight title because guys like him can shine. You got some guys, I mean, you think about it, look back in time, Kurt Angle only ever had to lose like 6-7 pounds and he could have competed for the light heavyweight or cruiserweight title back in the day. Same for Chris Benoit. Eddie Guerrero, if he didn't pack on all that extra muscle, probably could have. Stuff like that. So there are those borderline guys who could be world champions, stuff like that. Caleb Conley, not too likely. But Eli Drake versus Caleb Conley, what would you guys say? The match lasted only about what? 4 or 5 minutes?
There again, about a 5-minute match.
Yeah.
About that. Nothing special. Just, you know, I mean, it was, it seemed like it was longer, but then again, maybe you're not a thin, but.
Yeah.
It was pretty competitive for whatever, maybe 8-minute television match.
Yeah. And I was about to say that because where the Dawsons were basically a powerhouse match against Renaro and Buck. I say it like that because
that was a squash match.
I was about to say I didn't want to call it a squash match because I felt like that the guy still got enough offensive in to prevent it from being called a squash match. There was a squash match
Renaro
coming up.
And the other guy they got like maybe one or two moves and they just got fucking destroyed.
Right. So, but this match was definitely a competitive short match. So, I mean, I really enjoyed that. And Eli Drake, I've always been a fan of. You know, I went to TNA tapings when he was the King of the Mountain champion. Ugh. Not on him, the belt itself. When he was the Impact champion, I was a fan. I always thought the guy could be a world champion at one point. That's a personal preference. Some people may disagree with me, but I like him for that. But I'm glad he's with the NWA, and I'm looking forward to see how it goes. I'm hoping he becomes the national champion at some point. I really do. I'm a fan of the dummy hater of Eli Drake.
I liked him. He can talk. He sure as hell can talk. So, and the 5-8 minute TV match he had with Caleb Conley, very good little match. Again, you know, very crisp. They got in, took care of business, and Eli Drake came out on top.
Yeah, I'm wondering how they're going to be doing this. quick question, Dave. I doubt they did anything too formal like this, but we know that AEW is doing a ranking system, and they're going to be showing like the win and loss record for each of the wrestlers when they come out on their entrances and stuff like that. Was there ever a tracking back in the day? I mean, maybe the magazines, but was there ever like a real tracking that people would do, like where they'd show how much this guy's doing, wins and losses, that we can keep track of, like, okay, this guy's most likely going to be the next number one contender to the North American title or the national title, the television title, stuff, or even the world's title? Was there anything like that we could possibly see maybe they'll do again as well for NWA?
See, for us, it was you trusted your promoter to tell you what was going on.
Okay.
Johnny Valentine comes through town. He's chasing Wahoo McDaniel for the U.S. championship, the NWA U.S. Title. They at some point, you know, they're going to do a little TV interview. They're going to talk about the match. And somewhere down the road, the match is going to get booked. That's how rankings were to us. You know, the promoter pretty much told you by, you know, this guy's going all over the country doing this and that. You know, they're obviously way up in whatever the quote unquote rankings are.
Okay.
I mean, nowadays everybody's got a real ennui for statistics and numbers and lists and all that. So, you know, there again, and studio wrestling is kind of made to have those kinds of things. So it's an innovation that's available to them if they want to do it.
Okay.
Easily available, I would say.
Okay, then. So Dirk a lot commented in the chat. He said that they did a rankings in Bill Watts' UWF. I'm waiting back for a comment from him because I just asked, I don't know if you know or remember this. Was it just the UWF, or did they do it for Mid-South as well?
No, it was UWF.
Okay.
Yeah, it was for them. It was for them.
Okay, then. So
it was.
Maybe that's something we'll see. And I'm just trying to wonder because I don't know, you know, Eli Drake making his cut. He doesn't have to go for the title anytime soon. But when you start saying something like that, like, you know, you'll see me going, when I'm ready, I'll be coming for gold, you know, stuff like that. It makes me feel like in the coming months, we're going to see him fight for some kind of gold at some point. So I'm hopeful to see how it goes.
But I have no I have no doubt that the guys that they presented on this first show put over in the matches, put over with the promos. You know, these are guys that are going to get pushed down the road.
Definitely.
Eli Drake, definitely. I mean, he is you know, they'd be dumb not to give him a push towards something. U.S. title, world title, something.
Right.
You know, as we're going to talk about tonight, Nick Aldis dispatched Tim Storm. So that's over. Now somebody else has got to step up.
Yeah.
I think they are going to have him and Aldis go. They're going to go after Aldis for the title.
And there you go. I mean, and it's they're doing it the very simple way. You know, they're putting all their headliners and their stars out there. They're showcasing them. They're letting them talk. They're letting them say, "Hey, I'm here to win gold," and it just kind of makes sense. Yeah. You got Eli Drake. You got now you have James Storm, and you've got two or three other guys haunting around there. So.
Which James Stone we're about to get into, but quick thing. So first up comes the first video package of about for the world title match coming up, and it's Tim Storm. It's the promo going back to Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, where Aldis puts out the challenge to him that he needs to put everything on the line and say that if you win, you're the NWA World's Champion. If I win, you never challenge for this belt again. So, well, like I mentioned to everybody, periodically they kept doing the build-up for this match. You had Nick Aldis at the very beginning of the show, cut a promo, now you got the video promo. Moving on after that, you come to the announcers, they're doing some talk, promoting about it for the match, and then what happens? Josephus comes out, looking like I thought an overweight Damian Sandow for a second. I saw some pictures of Sandow at the NWA. By the way, everybody, just quick shout out for that. I mean, I'm not going to tell you any matches, but there was a big picture of all the wrestlers involved at the NWA Power tapings, and Damian Sandow is amongst them. But Josephus comes out, and I'm like, I thought it was Sandow who gained like 40 pounds. I was shocked. But he's screaming, "I want Storm! I want Storm!" Notice, like the announcers are saying that Tim Storm, he's going to be wrestling tonight, stuff like that. He just kept saying, "I want Storm!" And what happens? The NWA National Champion James Storm comes out, cuts his promo on Josephus, you know, saying, "I'm the only Storm you need to worry about," and just going out into it. And then the two of them goes into a fight. The referees and the officials are trying to break them up. Goes into a, and then it goes in. It just, they pull them away and everything, and then they move on from that. Even stuff like that. I'm trying to remember. Oh my God, what was it recently I watched? I watched a recent promo, Dave, of Jerry Lawler. It was Jerry Lawler and Dutch Mantel in Memphis. And I don't know if Jerry – I can't remember if Jerry Lawler was the champion or not. But it was Dutch Mantel's cutting this promo, and who's standing next to him? You remember the Master of Pain?
Master of Pain.
You'd know him
Michael
later as a
better,
man.
As the Undertaker.
Yes.
Okay, Mark Callis.
Well, yeah, right, yeah. But he was known as the but he was known as the Master of Pain in Memphis.
Okay, I'm familiar.
And Dutch Mantel is cutting this promo. Jerry Lawler comes out. He cuts promo, and then he has a guy come out. And what was he called? I think it was called like Lord Humongous. It was Psycho Sid Vicious under a mask. And so I just love the fact this happened in 1989. Seeing the promo, the way things went for James Storm. James Storm and Josephus kind of made me remember when I was watching that promo recently. Even that was authentic, and they're pushing around the announcer table. The announcers are trying to get out of the way. The fight, even the little stuff like that. And the only thing it was something to me was the fact that you had Josephus cutting his promo, wanting Tim Storm and everything, just saying Storm though. So I thought, hey, maybe James Storm's going to come out. But he's the national champion, you know, and he's not being called out directly. So I'm thinking, like, as a heel and as a champion, it didn't make entire sense for him to come out on his own because, you know, now he's just setting himself up. If he was to be directly called out, you know, like, because as a heel champion, you don't come out on your own for shit. That's what it kind of felt like to me.
I get what you're saying. I do.
But I still loved it.
I did. I liked what James Storm did. I'm not the biggest fan of his promos. I think some of his promos are a little forced. But when he's just like moving around talking shit to guys, there's not many guys that are better at that than he is.
Oh yeah.
You know, just pushing guys around and talking shit to him. He's very good at that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's going to be a great asset.
Definitely. I love James Storm going back to America.
I didn't think it was actually a bad thing that he came out and confronted Josephus. I mean, he kind of explained himself, you know, I'm the only Storm you worry about. Storm's entire deal is that, you know, he thinks that he deserves more attention than he's gotten or that he's getting because he's the national champion.
So Mike makes a very good point. Yeah. Mike makes a point. I think he was more than appropriately dickish.
Yeah.
I think when he won the thing, it was like, you know, he was kind of going on about the NWA didn't want me to win. The NWA didn't want me around. They didn't want me to win this. They don't like James Storm.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm the national champion. Now basically it's his fault. Things like, you're going to have to listen. You have to put up with me. I'm here now. Deal with it. And, you know, you don't like it, fuck you. I'm James Storm. That's basically what his whole deal is.
And in that case, I mean, it does make sense. I don't know, it just felt weird because it's also two heels and everything. But, I mean, overall, I really liked it.
What the fuck Josephus is at this point anymore?
Yeah. And that's the thing I was wondering as well, like, Josephus, you know.
What happened to the spiritual advisor? Where is she at?
What happened to his white robe and everything? He came out. He looked like a black haired Mordecai when he was first doing his stuff. You know, like a cross between Mordecai and Brian Kendrick when he was in TNA. You know, and that's what I was starting to wonder is like, you know, what happened to all that? And remember, all that stuff has been under since Billy Corgan took over the NWA, and so. I'm just curious what they're doing. It's not really a repackaging of Josephus, but it's more like they've taken a layer or two off of the packaging, you know? And I'm just wondering what it's going to be because I did like the way that Josephus was doing because, you know, and Mike knows me, how I've talked about some things. Like, I was never a big fan of the Dead Man Undertaker. I was a fan of the American Badass. So it was more realistic. But a guy who is a college professor, is an intellectual, all those things, but still believes in these kind of possible mystical things, these spiritual kind of stuff, is still a believable thing because he's not talking about the idea of having true magical powers other than powers within his being. And I like that kind of part of Josephus. So I'm curious what they're going to be doing with him from this future, especially because when we're going to have to get back to Josephus in a bit. But we then return to the first champions out for a match. The wild cards, Royce Isaacs and Thomas Latimer, formerly known as Bram, they're the NWA World's Tag Team Champions, and they're facing in a non-title match against Danny White and Mims. Easy squash match. This was the outright squash match. Ended pretty fast, maybe like a minute and a half or something like that. And
it went about a couple of minutes, I think.
I don't think it went too much longer, though. So
They were there for a cup of coffee, basically.
Yeah, and dude, this was the match. I was watching it, and they had the whole vibe down, right down to the jobbers.
Yeah,
both of those guys looked like 80s jobbers on TBS. Just go back and look at them. The one guy in the sleeveless T-shirt and the chunky black dude. Yeah, and I said chunky. Yes, kids. Dude, I mean, it was also I was like, wow. They're on that one. They just went just whole hog. Very, very nostalgic.
No, I really like that. I don't know. It's just like for a tag team match, you don't usually see too often of. Now, when the Dawsons did their squash match, they're huge guys. Now, Isaacs and Latimer, they're fucking ripped, but they're not huge like the Dawsons. So the idea seems as a squash match.
They have a bit of a presence about them, a bit of a look to them. They're not the hugest guys in the room, not the buffest dudes around, but they look like guys who can kick your ass.
Oh no, no, I'm not saying that they couldn't. I mean, if I were to be in a oh no, definitely. If I was to be in an argument with Royce Isaacs, first off, I wouldn't want to be because he'd whip my ass six ways a Sunday. So I'm not even trying to undercut. I'm just saying, like, as the tag team champions, you know, it makes sense for them to definitely destroy, but I just felt like maybe it shouldn't have been a squash match for that. Tag team matches, you don't see squashes too much other than, like, Masters, like I mentioned earlier, if, you know, Brothers of Destruction or something. But, I mean,
you get these guys over as ass kickers. Because that's who they are. That's what they are. They're ass kickers. Right. How do you get over ass kickers? You have them kick somebody's ass.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. It ain't rocket science.
Oh, no, definitely.
These guys are ass kickers. How do we get them over? Have them kick somebody's asses. Whose asses are they going to kick? These two schlubby-looking motherfuckers over here. Mims and this whatever dude. This guy wearing the
Danny
fucking,
White.
Danny White, whatever. The guy wearing the basketball shorts and the fucking Under Armour.
Yep.
Guy looking like a fucking backyard wrestler. Yeah, those, that's exactly who these motherfuckers are going to beat the shit out of and kick their ass.
Yeah. Quick thing as well, like I mentioned, I was going to be bringing it up, even though, you know, Mike just shot down the jobbers. Quick shout out, by the way, Billy Buck seems to be definitely a Georgia mainstay. He's been wrestling since 2003. Multiple time NWA and Anarchy Wrestling heavyweight and TV champions. NWA Anarchy is what replaced NWA Wildside when they shut down. So if you guys remember, Wildside was one of the top NWA feds in the 2000s. AJ Styles honed his craft there. So, et cetera. And I'll see if I can find some shit from Sal Renaro. But just because I said I would, that's all. But then we cut over to
I keep thinking he's Big Sal from ECW, but that can't be right.
He's 37 years old, 183 pounds, Sal Renaro. He's been wrestling since 2001, and he started with NWA Wildside as well. He wrestled a couple matches, looks like, for TNA, and then a lot of Ring of Honor until 2008, and then, yeah, all over the place. He did a match for Ring of Honor recently. I guess he's a North Carolina boy as well, it looks like. So, I don't know. We'll take a quick look at his titles. PWA, GCW, RPW. Yeah, his recent stuff is with Peach State Wrestling. He's a Georgia boy as well. So, okay, that makes sense then. So you got some of these fans that came in. If they watched the Georgia wrestling scene, they'd know who these guys are. So that makes sense. But moving on then, after the match, there was the promo cutting with the tag team champions, cutting a real promo, going exactly like what you were describing, Mike, how they were in the match. But then Eddie Kingston comes out, and if you guys have seen some of the promos that they've done recently, and that's when they showed Eddie Kingston in one of the videos on YouTube.
Eddie Kingston, you know, is like, I know you guys got a lot of wrestlers, but I notice you don't have a lot of fighters.
Right, you know.
He's
portraying himself as a fighter, as an outlaw, and the thing that I love was he was saying that he wasn't coming alone. He's talking about, like, his crew and everything, and which I was getting excited for because I'm hoping, you know, Eddie Kingston, if you guys were watching Impact, he was part of, he was starting up a faction. He was with LAX and then bringing back the OGs, which was Homicide and Hernandez. And then go figure what happens. Homicide comes out. So now it's not just, you know, because he said, like, you guys can't speak for the Outlaws. What do? They push that NWA interview table. Spun that thing around a couple of times. You could tell the way they were pushing it, they were actually a little worried that they were going to knock it over and break it. And they're like, oh shit, we've only got one right now. Don't break it on the first TV taping, guys. That's what I felt like, but they did that. And then Homicide comes out and they're doing their yell off. I was hoping to go into a bigger, they start into a brawl. And then what happens? The best part, James Storm and Josephus got back into it with a fight in the backstage and took it out to the ringside. And going into that, and I saw that, I'm like, that is just the awesome shit. I talked about Back to the Territories, I'll make another reference. Kevin Sullivan talked about how he got into a fight, I forgot with who, 1 week at a show in Orlando. And then what they did was, as a match was going on the very next week, as this match is going on, the two of them, Kevin Sullivan and the other guy, come back into the arena wearing the exact same outfits they were the week before, covered in dirt, making it look like they've been fighting for a whole week and everything. The fans are paying attention to the fight, even the match in the ring. They stopped to watch those go at it. And that's what I thought, like, for these, is that You have these two guys, everyone's paying attention to that. And then what happens? The national champion's getting into his own brawl going on, and it's just all out chaos. What did you think about that, Dave?
Okay, now here's the thing. With the studio shows, hell with anything back then, you know, wrestling always had that air of you don't quite know what's going to happen next. Who's going to come out? Who's going to show up? Who's going to get in a fight? And when Eddie Kingston and the wild card guys are getting in their schmoz, all of a sudden the camera swings around and there's James Storm and what his name is,
Josephus. Yeah. Just take the name Joseph.
And they're having a schmoz and they're taking it to the ring. And that's just, see, that's that just sort of air of you don't know what to expect. You don't know what's going to happen next. And all that's going on, you know, what exactly is going to happen? Well, you know, we got to see what was going to happen. James Storm and Josephus fought to the ring. Apparently they just, somehow they got, you know, they decided it was going to be a match. They got a referee and James Storm super kicked this guy a couple of times and super kicked his teeth up into his brain. Beautiful stuff. Beautiful. That's the way a badass is supposed to act, like a badass.
Oh, no, definitely.
And when you're walking around there, you can legitimately kick anybody's ass in the room.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about it. He just, you know, here's this schlub. I just kicked his ass. Who's next?
Yeah. And which goes right on into it. Right after that, what do we have? A very quick non-title match. James Storm versus Josephus. And what is it? Bell rings. Last call. Pinfall. Storm picks him up, does another last call kick, and then what does he do? He grabs him before he goes down, puts Josephus's thumb in Josephus's mouth. I'm saying it like that so nobody thinks I'm saying James Storm's thumb or mouth or whatever, like a baby sucking his thumb, and just let him fall down. And that was it. The only thing I felt was that I felt it was, I don't want to call it a burial, but it's like with the way they built up Josephus with the Tim Storm time, or later on when during like the anniversary show when he had his flock, if you will, you know, a Crazy Steve and Shannon Moore, they did some good stuff with Josephus. It's been gone for a while, meaning they haven't really been promoting him too much, and that's okay. But I don't want to use the word burial. Mike, I don't know if you can back me up or elaborate with what I'm trying to say, because I bet I'm thinking maybe you thinking the same. But the fact that just all that brawling and everything, and then it just goes into a one hit and a drop, looks great for James Storm. I just feel like it knocks down Josephus a peg or two, because if it had been like, let's say, a 5-7 minute match of really fighting and brawling, Josephus could lose but still look good because he looked like a real brawler, you know?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what they were going for with this. This confused me a little bit. I mean, I get that they're trying to establish Storm and he's got to win. They wanted to give him a victory over somebody, I guess, significant or something. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it. I don't know if Corgan's trying to, if they're burying Jesse. I don't want to hold off on, I don't want to say that.
Yeah, I don't think it's an actual burial. I just think when the fans are watching, it's like that, you know?
And you know, I don't think we should get too hung up on him getting buried. I suspect you're gonna see this guy a lot. Doing what, I don't know. But you know, somebody's gonna have to occupy the mid card. Why not him?
Oh, no, definitely. But that's why I'm thinking that's what the national title is I don't want to call it the mid-card, but it is like the top mid-card championship because it's the secondary championship to the world's championship. So James Storm.
But you have to look at the other side of it. You can take what would be considered a mid-card title, put it around the right guy's waist, and it all of a sudden becomes the main event. Around the right waist, it's a main event title.
Without a doubt. I mean, we can look back, you know, people have said that about Rob Van Dam with the TV title. When Brock Lesnar was the Universal Champion and he was gone for so long, guys like, you know, the ladder match between Dolph Ziggler and Luke Harper did an amazing job, and it was like the IC titles having to become the main championship for the time because Brock was always gone. So, I mean, I'm definitely in agreement with you. The national championship can feel just as big in some cases, if not bigger. I mean, you look at how ECW was. I remember looking back at their pay-per-view list. There were times when the ECW world title was in the first or second match of the night, and the tag team titles were the main event. You look at the Midnight Express. There were times they were main eventing shows for NWA or for Mid-South because they were the top draw. So I'm completely in agreement with you on that. I'm just thinking, like, in a way, technically the national title would be considered like the mid-card title in a way. So, I mean, Josephus is already in that spot. And I just feel like, you know, I wouldn't want to see him be knocked down already so much.
Well, and like I say, this is show number one. And, you know, all things are possible now. You know, all things at this point have become possible. They already have, how much did they tape 8 weeks of TV?
I don't know about, so, I don't know.
I think they have 7 or 8 weeks of TV in the can ready to go. Then they're going to come back in December and do probably a whole bunch more. So, you know, man, here, let me use the old cliche. In this case, for NWA, let's not obsess or focus on the destination. Let's focus and obsess on the journey to see where all of this goes. You know, and I understand that it's easy to think in terms of are they burying this guy or are they, you know, this is week one. Let's see what happens. You know, that Josephus guy, he seems to have a great personality. He seems to be like just your typical chicken shit heel.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I'm sure he'll be very useful. Very useful. So, you know, there's lots more to come. You know, hell, even the commentary was good for this show. You know, up to, and I know we're about to talk about, or finish talking about the world title match. Pretty damn good. Pretty damn good stuff.
Yeah. No, I loved it in those cases, and I do agree with you on that, with what you're saying. We should give it some more time, so I should hold back with some of my comments, I guess.
Oh, no, and I understand what you're saying. I'm just, if you know, this is just show number one, you know, that tells me that you know, they've got a lot. They're setting all kinds of stuff up.
Yeah.
For the future.
One thing, a little deviation before we go to the world title, because you sparked it in my head. I was listening to Wrestling Soup the other day, and one of the things that when they critiqued about AEW, and there's a reason for this, everybody. It goes with NWA that I realized. They pointed out that one thing they weren't a fan of was it did not feel like a first show for AEW Dynamite. Not that it wasn't the first show for Dynamite. It was, but it felt like this was not the beginning of the starting of telling the stories of these feuds. You know, they said it was a continuation, you know, as if you should have been watching All In, you should have watched All Out, you should have watched Fight for the Fallen, you should have watched Double or Nothing, if there's anything else that I'm missing, all that kind of stuff, Fighter Fest and all that, you should have watched every single one of those shows, you should have been watching Being the Elite, this is continuing all the stories that's going on, so now it's like, if this is your first chance to see AEW, it should have been the very beginning of the storytelling. Instead, it's like you're starting off, you're like, okay, I'm finally ready to read this book, and you open the book and it's starting right at chapter 4. This, on the other hand, the only thing that was a continuation was the Tim Storm, Nick Aldis, and they did enough promos talking about it to help fill everybody in. From Nick Aldis's first promo to the first video package that they did earlier that I mentioned to now, I'm about to point out, they then did the second video package showing Nick Aldis beating Tim Storm for the title at CZW, the package about before that with Tim Storm talking about when he was the champion, how it was the greatest thing ever, how he said, quote, was that I hope to be, you know, they people to critique his age, and he's like, I hope I'm 70 and still the world champion, and that he's on the highest point ever, and he's loving it. Loses the belt to Nick Aldis, and then it shows him accepting the challenge. You know, if he wins, he's the champion. If he loses, he's never to challenge for the title again. They filled in that story. That's the only thing that's a continuation. This feud that we're now starting to see between James Storm and Josephus, this started off tonight. This whole thing between Eddie Kingston and Homicide versus the wild cards, the tag team champions, started off tonight. Everything began tonight with the exception of the world's championship, and they filled that in. They let everybody know, hey, and right now, Range Balls is pointing out in the chat. He goes, yeah, I think that I've only seen one other Tim Storm match, so the background promos helped me get caught up on what's happening. That's where one of the things that the NWA, they did right, that Mish and Joey were saying AEW did wrong, is everything began. This was not like a possible culmination or in the middle ground. The only thing that was the feud between Tim Storm and Nick Aldis for the World's Championship, and they filled us in.
So, here's what's unique about that. That match was a blow-off match.
What, the main event?
That was their last match.
Right.
That was the blow-off. I mean, Nick Aldis won. He's still the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Tim Storm, by contract, can't challenge again for the World Championship. So who knows? But that was their blow-off. You know, now Nick Aldis moves on to whoever's next, and who knows what's going to happen or which direction Tim Storm's going to go. Of course, I believe that they did it as much to honor and give Tim Storm, you know, a tip of the hat. You know, he carried the belt for years, and he was a proud champion. So they what do? You feature him in the main event on the premier NWA TV program for the 21st century. Just makes sense. And you had the big blow-off match right there. Just makes sense.
Yeah, and that's what it is. The main event, everybody. World's Championship match. Tim Storm comes out first, cuts a long promo. It's the longest promo of the night. I'm not knocking it. That was the last bit of the storytelling, you know, like catching everybody up. There was four pieces for the storytelling for everybody tonight to fill in and let everybody know how the match was going. I mean, how the story has been. And it started with oh my God, I'm losing my train of thought. Blanking out. It started with the first promo with Nick Aldis at the very beginning of the night. It then comes to the first video package. It then cuts later on to right before this moment with the second video package. And then it culminates with Tim Storm talking about, you know, I have a 94-year-old mother. I'm still Mama Storm's baby boy, you know. I can't tell her that I'm doing this match, not because she's going to wonder if I won or lost, but because she's going to worry if I got hurt, which was a sweet thing. The moment, you know, and what was his name? Joe Kelly? What was his name? The announcer with Jim Cornette. He goes, look, Mama Storm's got a big following here, you know? It was hokey, but it was cute. It was fun. It was nice. It's one of those things that helped build up for more sentimentalness that you want to see Tim Storm win. Even if you think it's most likely Nick Aldis is going to continue on, you want him to win now. It's personal now, not on a personal, like, oh, the champion made it personal, I'm going to take him down. No, it's personal. Like, this, everything is on the line. And that was the final bit. Like, okay, now, you know, where AEW started UFC Chapter 4, NWA for the World's Championship feud, they gave you literally chapters 1 and Aldis's promo, 2 video package 1, chapter 3 video package number 2, and then this was the very last bit, and now you're caught up, and now we're going to go to the match. And it was a culmination. It's the continuing story for Nick Aldis and his time with the 10 pounds of gold, but it was a culmination, like you said, for Tim Storm. So one story ended tonight, and one story is continuing, and everything was caught up. And that was a great match from doing some of the classic spots, to pointing out that Tim Storm never goes on the turnbuckle, so to try to make moves like that, you know, it's showing like, okay, he's going to pull out any stop possible, ducking out of the way for Nick Aldis to just clothesline the hell out of Camille. And she took that like a fucking champ. I saw that, and I watched the replay. You could see she picks her head up so her chin doesn't get caught. But, man, she didn't try to take herself down before it hit, you know. Some people you'll see, you could start seeing them, okay, they're leaning their body back to get it going. No, full force. You saw that. Even Tim Storm taking the cheap shot. The fans started booing for a second there, but it goes into the idea that this guy knows this is the end of the line. If he loses, he will try everything. If he's going to do a dirty tactic just to win the title, that was awesome. And it came back to the whole Tim being the babyface again after that. It was a momentary feel. But those little things, you want to talk about a great culmination of a match and a feud. And not a career, because Tim Storm's still going to wrestle. This is only the world's championship that he can't go for. But, you know, I mean, he's a two-time North American champion. We may see him go for the national title, or maybe he's gonna try to be the older guy that picks a new protege and they'll go for the tag team titles. I want to see Tim Storm involved with the NWA for a while. But they ended the story. Nick, before we go to the after effects, Mike, any comments about the match itself? Because I know Dave and I have been talking the most. I've been talking the most because I never shut up.
I thought it was really good, actually. It was great. I did enjoy, like you touched, I don't know if you did or not, but that Tim Storm kind of was cheating a little bit. He hit a low blow on Aldis early in the match to try and win it. When there was that ref bump spot, although
yeah,
but I enjoyed that it was like there were sort of shades of gray throughout with Tim Storm, who basically was, you know, just showed signs of being desperate. So overall, I thought it was actually good. I thought it was a really good show they had put on. The main event was really good. So I just kind of, but I do wonder now what they're going to do with Tim Storm from here. I thought they were going to go with the whole stipulation was. At least I thought what would have made more sense to me if they were going to go with Tim Storm just losing was that maybe they would have just had Tim Storm put his career on the line.
Yeah.
Instead of just, you know, I can't challenge for the world title ever again. I don't know, maybe they're going to use him for something else, but that was, I don't know, just.
It took me back. If you want an example, if people remember, Sting at one point challenged for the TNA world title. And the stipulation was that if he lost the match, that he could never challenge for the title again. And that's what happened. So when he lost the match, he could never challenge again. But he could still be in TNA. He could have gone for the television title or the tag team title. He didn't, but he could have. And he did everything else. He was leading the charge against, you know, whether it was like trying to fend off some things with Aces and Eights or, you know, rebuilding the main event mafia. He continued on for a couple of years after that. So that's why I think it's what it is, that they're not done. They're not done with Tim Storm. But I think Tim realizes, you know, I'm not going to be able to be the champion again. Let's make this as a blow off or something. And Billy Corgan said, well, we're going to do it on the first ever TV tapings. Okay.
And that's what made it extra special.
What do you think about him, Dave? I mean, it's also funny the fact, I mean, he's an older guy, but I mean, Tim Storm, you know, he's known as Perfect Tim Storm. With the way he is, the simple tights, the way he does things, I like to think of him as kind of classic Tim Storm. And the reason why I say that is because he feels like he pointed out, for him, watching wrestling back in the day was the 605 Georgia wrestling out of Atlanta. And it just feels like that he's of that time. Like, he should have been born like a decade sooner, so he could have been wrestling in that time period, you know?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, he's definitely got a bit of a throwback quality to him. So, I'm quite certain we're going to see more from him in the weeks and months to come.
Yeah.
No doubt.
So, we come to the end of the match. You know, what is it? Tim looks like he's going to have a chance. Probably he's going to be for a vertical suplex or something. Instead, Aldis is able to get him in a roller for a package. 1-2-3 wins the match. The match is over. They have a pause where they're looking at each other. The fans are, you know, happy, applauding them. He gets the belt. A quick pose with the referee holding his arm up and holding the belt. He comes out, does the interview. Joe Kelly is trying to, ask Camille. And if everybody knows the whole thing with Camille, she's never said a word since working with Aldis, at least not on camera, for the NWA. She's never done anything like that. She's his insurance policy, and she doesn't say anything. And he wants to ask her, you know, how she's feeling after that clothesline. He's basically, you could tell all this is response, like, oh no, she's fine. She could take it, like, you know, like, unlike you, she can handle a lot more of a punch, you know? I basically want to say he's trying to get her to say sudden, and Aldis takes it back. And even being the heel, one of the things I like with Aldis is that you watch some of his promos. As much of a heel as he is, he respects history. You know, when after Holly Race passed away, rest in peace, they brought back a video that they showed that cut between with Aldis and doing a match in Missouri, and he pointed out, you know, like how much egotistical this guy is and everything he's doing. But he's like, you know, I got this match coming up, and I've got to be, you know, but it's even more nerve-wracking tonight because Holly Race is here. And that interview with him and everything, he's happy because Holly Race is considered to be one of the greatest, if not greatest, NWA World's Champion. Now tonight, the man where he started his dynasty as the NWA World's Champion goes back to when he beat Tim Storm, showing his respect for Storm, shutting down the announcer, trying to say this is Tim Storm's moment, everything like that. And, all the bonuses with that, and you know, saying like, you know, you can leave your clickbait news items for another time. And he starts walking off. He has a moment at the very end of the night. He's the show right before they cut to the credits. He puts his fist up and everything to Tim Storm, showing the moment. It's Tim Storm's moment in the ring by himself with that, and definitely paying the homages to him. And I really like that part. So it's like Aldis is a heel. But in the end, he's got that one little bit of a babyface side to him, and the fact that he will honor and respect the history of the champions before him. You know, maybe it's like, okay, if you're not a champion, if you've never held the 10 pounds of gold, you're not worthy. But if you've been the champion, I'm going to show you your kudos and respect that you deserve. Right, Dave?
Exactly. Exactly right.
Now I got.
I mean, you know, it. And I was going to ask you for your overall anyway, but I'm going to go ahead and just say, you know, overall, I really enjoyed it. Of course, you know, I'm never going to bitch about a 1 hour wrestling show. There is no reason in the world to bitch about that. Not with 633 hours of televised wrestling on basic cable networks, all across the spectrum. So, you know, it's nice to see, just an hour. Easy to access, easy to find. You know, for those of us who remember that, it was a very nostalgic trip. It was a lot of fun. And here again, I say this all the time about other wrestling, the other wrestling show I watch. They got me interested to see what's going to happen next week.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. As long as if you can pull me in to get me to watch next week, then I say that you've done a very good show and you've done something right.
I'm looking forward for next week. It's going to be a shame that I can't watch it live. By the way, side note, everybody, I'm going to pull it up. When I was watching it, I don't know how many people watched it total live. I can tell you that when I was watching it, the highest I saw was just under 11,000 people watching it live. And that's just on YouTube. I don't know how many people were watching it live on Facebook, but I'm looking for it right now. Their very first episode, they've already hit 32,000 views, and that's pretty good. That's really good, actually. So congrats for that. I'm pulling up their Facebook page as we speak to see how many people viewed it from Facebook. And the one annoying thing that comes with Facebook and YouTube, they may get the personal analytics and find out overall how long people would stick around. But I do know that on YouTube, if Dave were to turn on NWA Power and watch it for 3 minutes and cut out, NWA gets the same amount of credit as if he had watched the full hour. So I'm just trying to figure out exactly how many people watched. I can tell you right now on their YouTube, the Facebook page, I'm seeing it right now, 50,000 views, 763 shares, 1,500 plus comments, over 1,200 reactions of emojis, likes, and all that kind of stuff. I just put down a love emoji because fuck it, why not? And et cetera. So their very first night, they've already gotten, probably near 83,000 views between Facebook and YouTube. I screenshotted a comment from somebody that was in the YouTube section. I thought it was pretty cool. And he said this right here. He goes, I love wrestling from Algeria, North Africa. Thank you, NWA, for this opportunity to enjoy wrestling. The reason for that is they made a quick promo and saying, you guys asked and we're not going to do it. And originally the plan was only to be airing, I think, in the U.S. and Canada on YouTube and Facebook. They were going to have it. I don't know how the blockage works, but you can actually do it in a way to where it's only viewed like that. And then Fight TV was supposed to be the way that you could watch it in the U.S., but around the world as well. Kind of like what AEW is going to be doing. You can, until they get contracts and TV deals in local countries, outside of the U.S., the U.K., and Canada, maybe Mexico, I don't know, you can watch AEW on Fight TV like a couple of days later. So there's that. But they were able to put it out there to where the whole world can see. And it's one lone comment. I don't know how many Algerians watched it, but I really like the idea. You got, if you want to build your basis even in Africa by using the YouTube, you're able to pull that off. They're getting viewership in Algeria. They probably got viewership of people on YouTube in Morocco, a couple people in Tunisia, Mauritania, so on and so forth. That's one way to build it. And that's how you end up with the fact, you know, people are criticizing how Impact was doing on the Pursuit channel, and I'll be one to point that out as well. But YouTube and Facebook, people want to make a knock. The show just ended, you know, what? An hour and a half ago. It ended a little over an hour and a half ago, and they're already at near 100,000 people that they're going to be getting up to. 82 to 83,000 viewers right now. By the end of the night, they're going to have had 100,000 views. Easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that sounds like a success, and it doesn't even require a TV deal where they have to pay for anything. You know, the only thing, they're probably going to, I don't know if they're going to make any little money, if at all, from the ads. That was the one annoying thing that happened with me with YouTube was, quick side note, guys, because I had to switch to my phone. When I checked out on my phone watching the NWA, it was live. The times I kept trying to reboot on YouTube with this spare computer I got, it would take me back to the spot that I left off at. And I'm like, oh, my God, this thing is on a delay. How is this doing a delay? I didn't realize. And then I saw you actually, it takes you back to that spot, but you can pull the tab forward, you know, like how you do with a regular video, to the very end. And because it's a live video, it's just going to catch up from where it was live. It may take a couple seconds to boot it up, but yeah. So, you know, there's that kind of annoying thing when it comes to the laptop versus the phone. But these guys are getting great viewership, and all it required was Facebook and YouTube, let alone if they get a regular TV deal and when they get the replays on Fight TV.
I mean, I think they're going to be fine. And I could see the way they cut it. I mean, they cut it for commercials.
Right.
So they're looking for a TV deal. You can tell.
Even if not TV deals, they're just looking to get some ads in there. I mean, make a little bit of revenue like that, and that will help out.
They can definitely do that. So, you know, right now they're brand new, so the sky's the limit. And if they're actually getting some numbers going, well, man, that's a cherry on top.
Yeah. I'm just looking at some of these. You know, here's the behind-the-scenes video I was mentioning, 21,000 views on Facebook alone, let alone what they have on the website or YouTube. Seeing the fact, you know, 50,000 views on the Facebook for the show tonight. You know, it's just these little things, and they add up. You know, what's the saying I've said? I've got this because, you know, my dad was a trucker, and I've heard this similar stuff. You know, nickels and dimes equal dollars over time. You know, and that's what's going on, like the viewership, the fact that even right now, there were 24 people on the NWA's YouTube just trying to watch a replay on it quickly, which even says how much it is for the idea of how many people were watching it live, you know. And I'm trying to see if I can reboot, just see if the numbers changed at all. And oh, come on, don't screw me up on this, guys. Yeah, it's okay. So it hasn't really gone up too much more, but yeah, 83,000 views tonight. Rangeball says that he saw it up to 14,000 people on YouTube watching live, so that's pretty good. And I mean, again, Facebook and YouTube. If they could pull up a TV deal, it's even better.
Packed with the features you deserve, like
Dave. I don't know what you just hit, but we heard all of that.
Yeah, I sorry about that.
That's okay. What I hope they are truly the features that you deserve. But so. Any other last comment? Dave, quick question. How did you feel about the credits at the end?
They look like credits.
Well, I don't know how you felt about that. I know that
riveting commentary there, Dave.
I mean, you know, I've seen it 1,000 times. And you know, I was looking going, okay, they even got it down to the end credits.
Well, the reason why I was thinking was because I know Bruce Prichard was asked once on Something to Wrestle about why they never had credits on Raw or SmackDown. And he basically said outright that Vince McMahon didn't like credits. He did not like the idea of giving credit to other people. He wanted to be that, you know, he's the owner, he's the show, he gets the credit. He doesn't want the staff to know about it, you know. He doesn't want the staff to be getting credits basically too much. And so, but Billy, on the other hand, he named himself up. He named Trask. He named Lagana. I that's all I saw for the credits, everybody, because I stopped looking at my phone, and then, of course, it stopped streaming. So I don't know if there was other people named on the credits, but he'll show the credits. And over time, there probably going to be some more names that we see like that. But I seeing that just felt like even a little bit. I don't know. Did they do credits back in the day?
The TBS show did credits.
Okay.
Yeah, they did credits.
So, yeah.
That's where Dusty Rhodes was credited as Virgil Runnels, as producer Virgil Runnels.
Ooh, but did people know his real name back in the day?
Likely no.
Nice.
They didn't know who Virgil Runnels was, but, you know, years later, you know, oh, okay, well, that's Dusty.
Yeah. People are probably seeing Virgil Runnels and thinking to themselves, holy shit, no, he must be doing great ever since he left Ted DiBiase. Go Virgil.
Yeah.
So, all right. Now, overall, what would you, if you had to, treat this like a pay-per-view. If you had to give this a score out of 10 for its very first debut, what do you think? The one thing I would say quickly as a comment is, noticing how fast some of the matches were, it felt like to me, okay, they're doing these faster matches because they had all these other promos and spots they wanted to do instead. And I hope it's more wrestling down the road, but when you've only got an hour to work with, you got an hour to work with, so I got that part. But what did you guys think, if you had to give it a rating?
I thought it was fantastic. If I had to give it a rating, how many are we going for here?
Out of 10. 10. Unless you want to do the Dave Meltzer. 17th
Falls. Let's go out of 5, I would say.
Okay.
I'll give it 5 out of 5.
Dave?
I was thinking on the 10-point system, I'd be giving it an 8.
Okay, so a 4 out of 5 under Mike's system.
I'll give it a fucking 9 out of 10. I thought everything worked well. So
what prevented it from being a perfect as Tyler Dillinger would be the perfect 10?
I don't know if I fully liked what they did with the Josephus thing, but I'm willing to give it a chance.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they're doing with Josephus, and the fact that Josephus did not come out with a spiritual advisor also knocked it down a bit for me.
Yeah.
Spiritual advisor, no weird fanatic religious kind of overtones. Josephus, no spiritual advisor. Definite points off for that bullshit.
Well, definite point off, because you gave it a 9 out of 10, so it's only point off.
God damn it.
What?
I want the Josephus that I was promised in those vignettes.
Okay.
Spiritual advisor.
Everybody in the
manipulation of people.
Everybody in the Mixler and the Discord, please give us your ratings as well. I'll be mentioning those after Dave gives his comments. Dave,
Rage Balls gave it 5 Japanese flags.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Fantastic. 5 Japanese flags. Hi, 5 of them. Dave, what made it an 8 out
You're
of 10,
racist.
A 4 out of 5 for you to not be the perfect 10?
I don't laugh. Nostalgia. The nostalgia.
You felt it was too much nostalgia?
They shoveled it on. They didn't just lay it on, they shoveled the nostalgia on. And as much as I dug it, it got a little thick at points. I hope they become their own thing. You know, I don't want to see the 605 show. You know, I want to see their show. That it looks like that, I think that's cool. I think it's very intimate and a lot of fun. But I want to see their show. I don't want them to do the 605 wrestling show from TBS. I want them to do their show.
So you're okay with the layout, i.e. the one side of the audience, you're okay with the flag, all that kind of stuff? What?
Yeah, I'm all, dude, I mean, their setup is, for a studio setup, is perfect.
Okay, but it's everything they after, got, let me guess, like the, let me guess, the Austin Idol car dealership video is what you're probably thinking.
Dude, I, you know, I thought it was fun, but there again, I mean, it was just, you know, they're crutching on nostalgia. For us old timers and people who love such things. I just hope that as, and I really do believe that as the weeks and months go on, it's going to become more and more their stuff and not just a nostalgia trip for all of us who appreciate that, but that it truly does become its own show, even with the look. Cause I mean, they can't get away from the look. It's gonna look the way it's gonna look. Very close up and very intimate. As long as they feature their stars, pushing everybody the right way in a 1 hour studio format, I think they're gonna do great things. And it'll be a lot of fun. I know it's gonna be fun for a fan like me.
Yeah.
But you know, I'll go so far with nostalgia, and then it's like, okay, enough's enough.
You got to modernize it at some point.
Well, not so much modernize, but make sure that everything that you're doing is contemporary, to what's going on. That the stars that you're featuring are contemporary.
Right.
The way they're talking. You know, I don't want to see guys cutting 80s promos and somebody coming out trying to do Ric Flair. Ric Flair to define Ric Flair. We don't need another Ric Flair.
Yeah, I know, a quick side note, the Dawson that was talking for the most part on the post-match interview, I'm listening to him and I'm thinking like, oh my God, this guy's got a Ric Flair voice.
Now, you know.
That was Ric Flair voice to you. Holy shit.
It sounded like, if I close my eyes and you told me that was.
Your ears clean then.
Mike, if I close my eyes and you started playing that and you told me that was Ric Flair, I could believe it. It's like, oh, his voice sounds a little different, but that's Ric Flair.
That sounded nothing like Ric Flair.
I heard it, because you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me
when
Jake.
You listened to some fucking Ric Flair promos from before okay. he got, from before
well,
the
he didn't,
crash.
No. I'm talking about the voice, the energy and the way his voice was, because remember, Jay Lethal impersonated Flair for like a month long in TNA.
Yeah.
And his voice was not perfect, but
this guy said that he actually sounded like Ric Flair. The key when you do an impression, the key is to kind of sound like the person you're impersonating.
I kind of heard it. I'm just saying that. But
you need your ears clean, my good sir.
In any case, yeah, and I got big ears, so haha. But fly away like Dumbo, bitch. But no, I mean,
Dumbo was cool.
Oh,
Dumbo
fuck off.
Was over.
Yeah,
you are
yeah.
not cool.
Oh, fuck
you
off.
You are not over.
In any case,
Dumbo was definitely over. I can't do that. Dumbo was
over. Sorry. One thing I thought about look, I'm not saying they had to do it to be edgy, but did anybody notice that spot where I guess was it Nick Aldis who apparently had said an offensive epithet? Basically, is what Jim Cornette was saying. I guess he said "fuck" or "shit" or something like that. And he's like, he said an epithet, a curse word, something that we can't reply say again on this syndication or however you said it. I was thinking to myself, like, okay, that's
program
on this program. I just felt like, you know, okay, look, I get it. You got, I mean, it's going back to the classic thing as well, but this isn't on regular TV. This is on Facebook and YouTube. I'm not saying you need to replay, say the whole thing back. Would I be like, oh, he said he's going to fuck him up. You know, I'm not saying all out like that, but Corny went so much into the whole, you know, okay, he said a curse word and an epithet. We can't repeat it. It's like, okay, we get it. Move on, Jim, please. You know, it just felt like so much of a thing, like, you know, I expected like Joe Kelly to follow up with children of all audiences. We apologize for Nick Aldis's slip up there and do not condone that kind of language. That's what I was kind of starting to expect. And I felt like they didn't have to do that part, you know. You know, again, it's YouTube or Facebook. You don't have to worry about a censor. You know, you're not. It's not like you're playing Bobby Lashley trying to bang some guy's wife or something on black.com, you know. If you guys aren't watching WWE, by the way, which I'm not either, but I've seen all the posts, I know what's happening. Funny as hell. But those are the things. Like, you know, it's okay. It's use those moments. Let it be like realistic. I'm not saying like you have to have them say all the offensive words possible, like at a CZW or GCW show. I'm just saying that they have a slip up and they just go, "Oh, fuck you up," or you know, they, you know, on the sideline, "God damn it, that hurt," you know, something like that. That makes it more realistic, and I like that. So, I would give the show, I'm probably with Dave, I'd give it a 8 out of 10, or on the Mike scale, a 4 stars out of 5 stars. But
suck a fat shit covered.
No, 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 that was making fun of Dave Meltzer. I was doing the ratings like you, but I was just making fun of Meltzer while I was at it. Not making fun of you.
You were trying to make fun of me too, you fucking...
No, no, that was legitimately a tuna joke. But in any case, I
felt... You're a hooker.
Yeah, thank you. At least that hookers get paid. I'm agreeing with Mike on the whole thing with Josephus. I will hold out for a judgment to see how it does in the coming weeks, like Dave said. I do feel, though, that the match should not have been a, you know, finally they get in the ring, bell rings, and then one kick and done. It should have been a good match. In fact, they should have held it off and let that be, like, maybe the main event for the second or third show, because then it'd be for the national title, is what my thinking would be. But, so there's that spot. I liked the hokiness of the Austin Idol Wrestling college video. I really did. You know, if they get to the point where they could do a number of ads, maybe they're doing 3 or 4 commercials a show, and that's just one of them. You know, I'm not saying it has to be Austin Idol every week, but maybe like once every week or a couple of weeks, they do a hokey 1980s-ish commercial. I'd be okay for that. Because remember, there was a number of people that got into, what was it called? It's funny that we can't remember it, Mike. What was it called? Southpaw Regional Wrestling? The,
Southpaw Regional Wrestling.
Yeah, the hokey 1980s-ish,
it was like spoofing 70s, 80s.
Yeah, territory with wrestling. Lethal Leap Year, but it's in a non-leap year. So it's like, what the fuck? Funny. Which was funny as hell when you think about it. But
Big,
I mean,
Bartholomew, the showdown at the swamp.
Exactly. So like stuff like that, people got behind Southpaw Regional Wrestling for the WWE Network. So you can have some of this classic hokiness. You could do a hokiness like this, like the Austin Idol Wrestling College. And it felt like maybe it's actually modern because he had a website. And you know what? I got to check that out. I want to see Universal Wrestling College. I want to see if this is a real site. If this is a real site, then we know, okay, this shit was legit. I don't know if that meant that they had him pay for the time. I doubt it. Yep, it's a full website. Look at that. Austin Idol Universal Wrestling College. Unlike any other pro wrestling training center, you will have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be trained by someone who has totally left their mark in the annals of professional wrestling. And goes on from there. Looks pretty cool. I'm going to look into this site. Not like I'm going to get hired or go to school, of course, but pretty cool. Check that out, everybody. Again, October 18th is when they're going to be announcing the ticket sales. Not announcing, that's when they'll ticket sales for the December shows. If I'm not working those days, rest assured, you will see, I'm going to be trying to get myself a ticket for at least one of those days, and I will be up there. I work nights. I will spend my night driving up to Atlanta, try to get a couple hours sleep, and then do the NWA show. I will do that because I wanted to be there for these first tapings, but I had to work. But, yeah. Dave, if they were to do a show in Texas, depending on where in Texas, or in Louisiana, or Oklahoma, just because you're in East Texas, would you make the drive out for an NWA studio taping?
Now, if they come to Dallas-Fort Worth, I'll certainly put them on the schedule. If they go to Louisiana or Oklahoma, they're on their own.
What about Houston?
They're on their own. Dude, I ain't driving any more than 30 miles in any direction. To go to a wrestling show. I'm telling you that right now.
And meanwhile, you got me. Do you know how long it takes for me to get to fucking Atlanta? It takes 4 hours just hitting the Florida. It takes 4 hours just hitting the Florida Georgia line to hit Atlanta. Let alone.
I can imagine that.
And then it's like 3.5 hours just to hit the Florida Georgia line. So I'm going to be driving all night. Trust me, guys. It's
gonna ain't going more than 30 fucking miles to a wrestling show from my house. Just stick the pin in it because that's just the way it's going to be.
I'm going to be bringing my official Reggie Parks NWA certified replica 10 pounds of gold belt. I'm gonna
don't
hope to
be
get
that guy who brings a fucking replica belt on the show. And
did you see the replica belt in the front row?
Yes, he did.
What a fuck!
I saw the replica belt in the front row.
I want to bring it because let me finish. I want to. I'm not saying I would have it on TV. I mean, look. I mean, if I got no place else to put it, then screw it. I want to be that guy. But I want to go there because I want to get Tim Storm and Nick Aldis's autographs for the belt with a silver Sharpie. Really? Now I get nothing from you guys?
That's fine.
Yeah, okay, thank you. I got Dory Funk Jr.'s autograph on there, so I want to add other world champions. I mean, it's weird that I got J.J. Dillon's autograph on there. It makes sense he held the belt more than Ric Flair when he was the champion. He carried it around on the tapings. But, so at least there's that. But I want to add some other world champions to actually having held that belt. I regret not bringing that with me to the last Championship Wrestling from Florida Legends Fan Fest because Ricky the Dragon Steamboat was there, and I should have gotten him to autograph the belt, but I didn't think of that. I thought about our belt. But we are now at an hour and 40 minutes officially of the time on this show, so I think we've done more than enough time for this. I wouldn't be surprised if for the future, guys, that the following NWA power reviews will end up only being about maybe an hour long. I think we just went so much because it's the very first show.
We did have a lot of extra stuff to say. So,
because we're not going to be analyzing every little thing like we did today. Maybe a little bit. Maybe there's going to be some moments where a month from now, Dave's going to be like, "Okay, fine, enough with the fucking Austin Idol car dealership."
And thanks to everybody in Discord and Mixler for sticking with us tonight. We appreciate everybody showing up and giving us a listen. We love you guys. Thank you very much for all your support and for giving this new little venture of ours a try.
Definitely. And if this stuff works out, then we're going to have an eighth show to add to the WNC network. Which, quick side note, everybody. If you guys do a separate show and you're not part of the WNC network, contact one of us, especially Dave. Dave is our
Let me know.
Dave is like the vice president of outreach and production, audio production. He's the one who gets everything out for the network, and we're always looking for more shows. I've made the joke, if you do a show about anything, if you do a show about stamps, and you let us know. And Dave may say no to that because I don't think Dave likes stamp collecting. You know, he thinks those people are weird.
Let me put it in a very direct way where everybody will get it. If you're a podcaster out there, a new podcaster, and you'd like a more community forum to release your and publish your material, come on over to the WNC network. You know, where I can assure you that we're going to treat you right. And I'm kind of the gatekeeper over here at the old WNC network as far as that goes. So you're probably going to have to give me a little extra sugar. So, but forewarned is forearmed, I always say.
#gatekeeper Dave.
Here's a quick idea for you guys. These are all the platforms that we're on. Podchaser, Podbean, Pod Paradise, Listen Notes, TuneIn Radio, Radio Republic, Radio Public, Player FM, CastBox, Google Podcasts, Anchor.fm, Overcast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Chartable, Podbay, Blueberry, Spotify, Spreaker, and the WNC Super Parties air on the Wrestling Soup Network. We also have Mixcloud Listen on there, but we're trying to figure out some of the kinks as far as trying to get the RSS working for it. There's been some troubles with it, so
we've definitely had some issues with our Mixcloud and the RSS, so if you see it pop up, you'll know that those issues are over, but right now it's kind of an ongoing thing. I check back in on it every so often, and I'm still just as curious and bumfuzzled as I was the last time. There's something up with it, but we'll figure it out. So if Mixcloud happens to be your bag, just keep your eyes and ears open. We'll be there soon enough.
Exactly. Sutton, when it comes to Mixcloud, Sutton's rotten in Denmark. So,
my thoughts exactly.
So we'll figure it out, but that's what we're doing. So if you guys are trying to get in, then we can definitely help you out, you know, and expand. And here's the thing. Maybe you guys already are on some of those platforms. There's nothing wrong with being on it twice, you know. Just expand the reach. I mean, think about it. You can watch Impact Wrestling on Twitch, Access TV now, and Pursuit. And what's wrong with that? So you have two channels to choose from. Same thing for us. So if you guys are brand new helping out, if you guys are doing another wrestling show, I know Dave and I were, you know, we were talking about trying to see about finding somebody else to do another wrestling show, because we now we're going to be looking at the NWA Power Review. We got the MLW report, Conspiracies in Kayfabe. We got those episodes to upload and go from there. So a lot of jolly good fun with all that. But
I mean, quick note on the network. If you'll notice now, of course, Transcontinental Project, they've been on something of a hiatus. So we've been publishing a lot of their back episodes, and those are doing pretty good. Give them a listen. Johnny's Reality Check is now a weekly released show until we catch up to where he's at currently. So every Wednesday, usually around 6 a.m., I'm releasing a newer episode, excuse me, of Reality Check. I just posted right before we started this my MLW report, and I'm going to assume that we're probably going to post this as well, John.
Oh yeah, that was my plan. I've okay. got this on the full recording. If I need to do any editing, which I don't think so, and once I'm done exporting the audio, I'm going to send it straight to you through Skype.
Well, then that sounds like a good deal. And yes, Dirk, another wrestling show. It's we're getting curiouser and curiouser. But we're trying to become as well-rounded and diverse as possible, with Reality Check and Transcontinental. Yeah. Now my little MLW, which is never that long anyway, this show, which is probably going to be about an hour. So, a lot of fun stuff coming up, lots of fun stuff being released. Keep your eyes and ears open. And of course, and as always, every Thursday night, right after Wrestling Soup, you can find myself, you can find sometimes Johnny, sometimes Mike, sometimes Jenkins, sometimes who the hell knows who's going to show up for the WNC Super Party, live on Mixlr. Now we're on Discord. We are legitimately and virtually everywhere. If you stand in the right spot in Silsbee, Oklahoma, you can catch us on the fillings in your teeth.
I didn't even know there was a Silsbee, Oklahoma. I know
there is a Silsbee, Oklahoma. I have not been through it, but I've driven close to it, so I know it's there.
I know Mark Henry's from Silsbee, Texas. So
he's from Silsbee, Texas.
Yeah,
Silsbee.
Yeah, okay, Silsbee and Silsbee. Okay, there's the difference. So if you guys are following us on our social media, you guys will see any updates going on with the WNC Florida heavyweight champion, Romeo Quevedo. Should be seeing some updates pretty soon with him.
Yes, he will be defending the title very soon against Johnny Florida.
Yeah.
The loser has to leave Florida forever. We're hoping Johnny loses. We're gonna send him to.
Wait a minute, that's not
a freezer unit or something somewhere in Antarctica.
That's not the stipulation I heard. I heard an entirely different stipulation. Loser becomes the. See, this was a loser becomes the winner's cuck. Matt.
First, Bobby Lashley is getting is going black.com, and then next thing you know, I'm gonna have to get HotLadSensations.com for my girl. That's great. So
kind of weird, but you know what? I like the sound of that. It's weird. It's fucked up.
It's contemporary. It's hip. It's happening. Loser becomes the winner's cup.
Paul Heyman's doing a bang up job. Apparently, that's what you do now. You don't book wrestling according to your years of wrestling knowledge. You just book wrestling according to whatever you beat your dick to on Pornhub that day. That's basically just how you do it.
So if the WNC's champ says, Johnny, drive a 6-cent spike into your scrotum on a wooden
bench,
you're going to be a scrotum nailing son of a bitch, you cuck.
I don't know if that's I don't think that you keep using that word, and I don't think you're using it in the proper context.
I'm probably not. I have no really earthly idea what the fuck it means exactly. It's so much fun to say.
Well, I mean,
you're, and I love saying it.
Let's educate you, Arisa. Eli Drake says, "Let me talk to you." cuck is a word usually used, at least in political debates, as somebody who has non-Republican views.
Oh, let's not start. Anyway,
that's not what it means. It's a derivative cuckold.
The other meaning is, you know what, we'll just look it up yourself.
Yeah,
right, listen,
we're getting close to 2 hours, so we got.
I think we're getting a little punchy here, so we all need to go to our respect. Go to our Johnny Florida.
Loser has to go to Florida. Somebody put Brian and hit place. Johnny with a chair, so we have to leave.
Yeah.
Got to get him out of there. Go to your happy place, Mike.
Go to our Facebook page. You'll follow any updates with Romeo Quevedo. He's traveling with the belt as well. He just made an open challenge, basically saying he will defend the title against anyone, anywhere. So we may be seeing the championship being defended in other parts, not just over in the west coast of Florida, as we've been seeing. And that's good stuff. He holds multiple other titles in other feds between the U.S., between Florida and Alabama, and he also now performs in Puerto Rico. So the people of Alabama and the people of Puerto Rico get to see the Florida championship as well. Facebook, WNC Network, go to the WNC Network on Twitter. Check out all of this and a lot of good stuff. We've been building this show up in so many different ways, making it diverse. This whole thing started with one wrestling podcast, and it got to the point where we were cutting back more shows, but then cut back on the wrestling stuff. The idea of adding the, you know, Dirk Lott, another wrestling show on this place, well, it's because we're kind of going back a little bit to our roots and wanting to get more wrestling into the network, but we wanted to be as diverse as can be with shows. And each year there's been kind of a theme, if you look at it. When we first started in 2016, the very first year was about building it up. The second year into 17 was the idea of building up and all our relationships and everything that we've done. The third year was Fight TV and going from there. And now in 2019, it's been built about building a network of shows and going like that. It's kind of like an amateur network, whereas the Wrestling Soup Network is kind of like amateur to pro-ish, you know, kind of like the semi-pros like in wrestling, you know, to the point of being the professionals, if you will. I mean, the day will come that Mission's going to be able to take down Stone Cold Steve Austin and Joe Rogan, because fuck them. But we're like, you know, we're the independents, if you will. We're the indies for the podcast, and we're helping build up like that. And each year is going to be sudden. I don't know
We're like the shindies, really.
Oh, fuck off. Anyway, I don't know what.
Listen, we do okay.
Definitely.
We're not burning the barn down, but let me tell you something. We're not, it's not as terrible as some might think.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing okay.
Let me give a quick idea. Between podcasting and, our show on Fight TV, Breakings on Fight TV, between Fight TV and podcasting, we have confirmed viewership in 98 countries, okay? We finally made our goal that we had, that I had set. I want us to hit a minimum of half of the number of countries that are recognized by the United Nations, which if you include the two observers of Palestine and the Vatican, that's 195 countries, which means we need to hit at least 97 countries. It would be 194. So yeah, as far as meeting the official standards, hitting 98 means hitting half of them. We finally surpassed that goal. You know, I'd love for us to hit all the countries, and we're growing. This last month, we got viewership on Fight TV out of the Republic of Oman in the Middle East, out of Barbados, and in Africa, we finally got viewership in Libya and the Republic of Ghana. So we're growing. Okay, are we going to be breaking this point to where we're going to be ending up on terrestrial radio anytime soon? No. But guess what? We're doing things even I did not think we could do for years on. Okay? We got great viewership. We got great numbers. We got great support. And we're building a great family of different shows and podcasts and stuff like that to be on. Okay? Transcontinental Project, it's pathetic with Scott and Rybrett. They don't belong to the WNC network. We don't own them. They are independent. We help. We are a place for them, platforms for them to get their shows out there more and for more people to see. That is it. We have this great, it's a family. It's not ownership. Okay? So, in any case, that's what we're doing. And with the NWA show now, with the NWA Power Review, I'm hoping to see how this can go. I'm hoping to see how good we can get this. And just supporting the NWA. I got the idea from Dave with the MLW report. I've been wanting to do a show like this, and with the NWA, that's going to be my goal. The shows that I'm not going to be on because I'm going to be working, It's probably going to be me watching the replay on YouTube and then doing a recap like that. The other weeks, right after the show's done, as long as I'm free, I'll be doing it live. And I don't plan on it being a solo show. I want somebody else on as well.
And that way, it'll always be a surprise.
Exactly. So, but with that,
and we all love surprises, don't we?
Yeah. Hey, Chris Candido convinced Cornette to do a surprise at ECW just because they needed a surprise. So.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Yes. Everybody loves surprises. Listen, here's a surprise right here. This has gone on long enough, at least for my part anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bid everybody a fond farewell. Tell everybody good night. We are recording this live at, and it is 8:26 in the evening here in, North Texas. So I'm going to, send out a hug, send out a kiss, send out a little love, and, hope everybody's, doing okay, and, we'll probably see you, tomorrow, I guess. No, day after tomorrow.
I always consider Dallas an East Texas city.
Well, they call it North. It's really Northeast Texas, but this area is considered North Texas, whereas further north is the Panhandle.
Amarillo.
Strangely enough. It's not considered North Texas. This is North Texas. Up there, that's considered just the Panhandle.
Wow. Okay, I'm looking at the map right now. Fucking mind blown. I'll be damned. Where the fuck is the University of North Texas?
It's about 40 miles from here in Denton.
Fuck me. Okay, yeah. Mind fuck for me, everybody. One last thing, actually. Please support us on our Patreon, patreon.com/WNC. I just got next year's championship belt. The blood belt has arrived.
Very cool. Very cool. Let me say this. A lot of people haven't seen it. We've been privileged enough to all see it, within the group. Very nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think anybody that wins next year's tournament, this will be a belt they'll be proud to have.
Exactly. And I'm planning on getting so many Legends autographs. Remember, minimum of $10. That's all you have to donate on Patreon throughout the year. $10 one time, $1 10 times, it doesn't matter. As long as by New Year's Day we've gotten $10 from you through 2019, you're in our tournament, you're on the show, and you're competing for the championship along with so many other prizes. I just bought a shitload of DVDs that can be included. I got a bunch of action figures. I got so many other good items. And ask Luke Birch. He won the title this last year. A lot of value for just $10 of donations. So you guys are getting, we'll be able to get a lot of good stuff. But with that, we're going to finally cut this out of here.
Thanks for listening.
Have a good one, guys.